Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week and kind of a heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week. It is the second week of February 2026, Saturday and Sunday, February 7th and 8th. Our regional forecast, mostly cloudy across the region today, then becoming gradually sunny. Highs in the upper 40s, low 50s. A calm wind tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the 30s. Mostly cloudy Sunday, changes on the way. High only in the lower 50s at best, and a wind picking up, gusts occasionally into the 20s and 30s. And Sunday night, moisture moves in, rain and snow in some areas, early in the morning hours, Monday. Wind gusting up to 20 miles per hour, and chance of precipitation pretty much 80% across most of the region. Snow likely Monday morning, partly sunny otherwise for the day. And wind gusts again into the 20s, chance of precipitation pretty thorough across most of the state. Not very much accumulation in the lower regions. And that cold front establishes overnight, Monday night, lows down around 20. Tuesday, partly sunny, highs only in the 30s. Obviously, the weather continues to shake the country up. Record lows, snow and ice in the south. And the tropical 60s here in our region. Spring-like weather that's gripped Montana since before Christmas shows almost no signs of going away. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien has more on where our winter went.
As snowstorms and brutally cold temperatures have slammed into the eastern U.S., Montana feels more like April than early February. Trent Smith, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Missoula, says it's not just a Montana thing. Most of the western U.S. is experiencing unseasonably mild temperatures and low snowfall in the low to mid elevations.
We've been dealing with a ridge of high pressure that has kind of developed over the top of us, and it's just gotten a good hold of us, and we can't seem to shake it.
In Montana, Smith says snowpack in the high elevation is for now holding steady at 100 to 120% of normal.
But below 6,000 feet, it has been a different story where we've just been warm with the melting and most of the precip has been falling off. So a lot of our observation sites below 6,000 feet are probably sitting in the 40 to 60% range.
Forecasters are monitoring a potential weather pattern change to cooler and wetter conditions by mid-month, but details are still uncertain. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
In Billings, a substantial amount of police activity during the last 2 days of January kept the social media platforms busy. Billings Police Department clarified with a brief press release Monday, explaining that multiple arrests were made in late January as part of a multi-agency law enforcement operation in Billings. Billings Police Department says 5 felony arrests were made related to human trafficking offenses and 2 felony arrests for child sexual abuse as a result of the operation. Investigators also seized methamphetamine, mobile devices, U.S. currency, and additional evidence associated with the targeted activity. Lieutenant Samantha Puckett with BPD says Operation Vigilant Spectre 6 was a collaborative investigation focused on individuals involved in human trafficking and child predator activity. The investigation was carried out over a 48-hour period, January 28th to the 30th, involving some 65 personnel representing 13 federal, state, county, and municipal law enforcement agencies. One of the arrests Friday afternoon was at a residence on Normal Avenue, west of Montana State University Billings campus. Investigators also identified 17 individuals and/or IP accounts for ongoing investigation related to child sexual abuse and human trafficking. A couple of Montana newsmakers in the stories this week. Montana native and UM alumnus Bobby Houck is retiring after 14 seasons with the Grizzlies, leaving the football program with a 151-43 record as the winningest coach in Big Sky Conference history. Houck explained at a Wednesday morning campus news conference the changing D1 football environment led to his decision. Montana Athletic Director Kent Haslam had less than 16 hours from the 8 p.m. phone call from Hauk earlier this week to move forward with keeping a winning program. How did he do? Here's YPR's Kay Erickson.
At a news conference Thursday afternoon on campus in Missoula, UM Athletic Director Kent Haslam introduced Bobby Kennedy as the next head coach. Kennedy is familiar with Montana players from his position last season on staff as the wide receiver coach.
Guys that come to work every day, great character guys. And trust me when I say this, okay? They are invested in moving this program forward. And I just want you guys in the back to know how much I appreciate you and your support.
The 59-year-old new head coach also praised the coaching staff he worked with last year and said the staff is staying together for the 2026 season. Kennedy has a 30-year resume of coaching college football on a lot of top echelon teams, including Texas, Stanford, and Washington. But this is his first stint as a college head coach, and he says it will be his last job.
Okay, I want to do it with these guys, and I want to do it with these players and back, and I want to do it with the great Grizz fans and the people of Montana.
I'm Kay Erickson, Billings.
Another well-known Montana name also popped up a little unexpectedly this week. Famed paleontologist and former Montana State University professor Jack Horner, who consulted on the Jurassic Park movies, spent several days at the ranch of late disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. That's according to emails among the millions of files the Department of Justice released late last month connected to Jeffrey Epstein, who in 2019 was arrested for trafficking and sexually assaulting dozens of underage girls. John Robert Horner, or Jack, was born in Shelby in 1946. He served as professor and staff at Montana State University and the Museum of the Rockies in Bozeman for over three decades. He drew local and national headlines for marrying a teenage paleontological student at MSU in 2012. Emails show in August that same year, Horner visited Epstein's Zorro Ranch in New Mexico for a dinosaur and fossil dig at Epstein's invitation. Following the August visit, Horner sends his best wishes to Epstein and the girls. In the same email, he requests Epstein's help to fund a seminar in Bozeman, which appears to have been granted, although Epstein did not attend. Later emails indicate Horner visited the ranch with a student for lunch in 2016, but Epstein was not present. MSU and the Museum of the Rockies declined an interview. An MSU spokesperson said in a comment that the museum could not find a donation from Epstein. Horner released a social media statement on Thursday responding to recently publicized emails between him and Epstein. In Horner's four-page Facebook statement, he said his correspondence and meeting with Epstein in 2012 concerned a potential donation from Epstein for Horner's Dino Chicken project that the paleontologist said was in high risk and extremely difficult to fund. He said Epstein was known to him as a wealthy person with an interest in science who had made donations to major academic institutions. Horner said the trip to Epstein's New Mexico ranch was to pitch his project, which Epstein declined to fund after his presentation. Following his trip, Horner sent a brief email thanking Epstein and the girls, who he said were identified to him as college students, for allowing him to present his project and explore the geology of the ranch. Horner said he was aware at the time Epstein had previously been charged with soliciting a prostitute and served a sentence. Horner adamantly states in the social media post that he was not aware of any additional allegations or misconduct. Horner writes, "No amount of money in the world would have lured me to meet with a known sexual predator." Horner acknowledges he made a return visit to the ranch in 2016 as part of a Southwest U.S. geology tour, but Epstein was not present. Horner is the latest person caught up in the vortex of emails among the millions of files released late last month by the Department of Justice. Sous chef Sean Sherman was in the region as the Indigenous Food Lab in Bozeman preps for the public. Chef Sherman was at Yellowstone's Mammoth Hot Springs last Sunday for a book signing. His new cookbook, Turtle Island, furthers the chef's mantra to support and promote Indigenous food systems and native food sovereignty. Building on a philosophy of pre-colonial Indigenous food systems using only ingredients that are native to North America, Sherman's menus are inspired by the seasons and the land. Through the nonprofit Natifs, North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, Sean is pressing to revitalize Indigenous food systems across North America. He's working on opening that Indigenous food lab in Bozeman this spring. Oamni, the chef's Minneapolis-based restaurant, co-owned by Sean Sherman and Dana Thompson, won the prestigious 2022 James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant. Its location in Minneapolis has placed Sherman on another activist front as he deals with running a business in a hostile civic environment.
But it's basically shutting down the entire food system. Most restaurants will barely last another couple months if this continues. So it's really bad if this continues to be the way. So I was just in D.C. the other day talking to Senator Tina Smith and handing a letter to all the senators to, like, why don't you guys, like, figure out what you're doing with the situation? Because this is not sustainable. This is going to actually ruin the economy. Like, I'm all for immigration control, fine. But the tactics that are being used to be able to, like, break into people's houses, break constitutional rights, violence people on the streets with you know, no accountability at all, just a masked armed force coming in and terrorizing an entire city is not the way to do it. And so that was just the message of just, like, figure this out, you know, and don't give yourselves more money until you do, please.
Sherman was in Missoula Tuesday evening for the University of Montana President's Lecture Series at the University Center Ballroom. Immigration issue, not just here, but around the world and throughout history, ultimately comes down to the question who belongs where. The definition of citizenship is changing, and many in the U.S. feel we're due for a change. Montana Public Radio Shaley Ragar reports that Montana's junior senator has thrown his support behind the Trump administration's push to end birthright citizenship.
President Donald Trump's executive order redefining citizenship was challenged and is now before the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy signed on to a brief supporting the administration's policy. Trump's order would end automatic citizenship for children of parents who are unlawfully or temporarily in the country. The administration argues such parents are not subject to U.S. jurisdiction. Several federal courts blocked the order from going into effect. The High Court will hear arguments debating its constitutionality in April. Sheehy is one of 28 federal elected officials to sign onto the brief in support. He's the only delegate from Montana to sign. In Helena, I'm Shaley Ragar.
History provides no shortage of citizenry struggling with who belongs where. A century ago, Europe endured two major world wars that decimated populations across the continent. Much of the antagonist drive in those conflicts, particularly in World War II, centered on who belonged where and the social solutions to that belief. Montanan Andrew Laszlo Jr. is keeping the memory of one of the most horrific outcomes of that war alive, the murder of over 6 million Jews in concentration camps. Laszlo presented a talk on his father's book, Footnote to History, From Hungary to America, the memoir of a Holocaust survivor. He was at the MSU Billings History Department Tuesday evening. Andrew Laszlo Sr. survived the Nazi camps and eventually became a renowned Hollywood cinematographer. Unlike many children of Holocaust survivors, Andrew Laszlo Jr. did not hear about his father's struggles during World War II until the young man was an adult.
I was 45 when I found out, and my father had kept this a secret for many reasons. He had sworn he would never think or talk about his past again when he got on the boat to come to America. He didn't feel like a victim, and he didn't want us to feel like we were victims. He didn't want to relive his past or cry over spilt milk. But more importantly, I think he thought our lives would be better if we didn't know, if we could grow up and define our lives ourselves and not feel hatred. And he might have been right. I go to events with my publisher often to promote the book, and often there are other Holocaust second generation people there whose lives have been destroyed because they have so much baggage and hatred that they didn't have the carefree youth that I did.
Laszlo Jr. says his presentation is important, especially as a reminder to young people who may not be aware of the atrocities.
But when I talk to kids, and I do talk to a lot of high schools, and I'll be talking to many more this school year, most of them, unless they've grown up in a traditional Jewish household, really have very little idea. They've seen pictures, but they have dismissed them like I did. When I was growing up, I saw the pictures and then went out and played baseball. When I was 45, I realized I could have been looking at my father.
And coming up this Wednesday, February 11th, Andrew Laszlo Jr. will be part of the Anne Frank A History for Today community event at Billings West Senior High School. Students there are supporting the Anne Frank Traveling Exhibit from the Institute for Holocaust Education. That event starts again Wednesday evening at 6. It is open to the public. Stories we're continuing to follow include pushback on some Trump administration energy policies. The U.S. Congress recently renewed federal dollars for a national energy efficiency program that Montanans in Bozeman and beyond use to gauge energy savings. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche has more about Energy Star's funding in 2026.
The U.S. Congress passed a mandatory minimum of $33 million for Energy Star, a decades-old program that certifies the energy efficiency of products and buildings. City of Bozeman Sustainability Manager Natalie Meyer says the recent funding is good news for Bozeman, which uses Energy Star software to check in on the city's energy efficiency. Bozeman is one of a handful of communities in Montana with plans to reduce emissions and reach carbon neutrality on a community-wide scale.
So it's just, again, a really simple way to track and monitor the efficiency of our buildings and help us meet our energy and climate goals.
Energy Star previously fell under the Environmental Protection Agency's Atmospheric Protection Program, which President Donald Trump, in his discretionary budget, recommended cutting. In April, hundreds of organizations signed a letter asking for funding to keep Energy Star going, which Congress has now granted. Montana's delegation was not available by deadline. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Montana's Northern Cheyenne Reservation is using solar energy to expand its buffalo program and feed the tribe. Laura Hatch has more on this Big Sky connection, the Daily Yonder collaboration.
On Montana's Northern Cheyenne Reservation, a buffalo restoration program is tapping solar power to expand and to feed the hungry. Buffalo are ecologically important on the North Plains and in Northern Cheyenne history. But today, the tribe suffers from food insecurity. Brandon Small runs the reservation's buffalo program and donates meat to tribe members.
There's a lot of people on the reservation that never ate buffalo before. A lot of them right now, they don't even get an actual meal besides a microwave meal.
I want to try to change that.
To process more buffalo meat and to grow the herd, a Native-led nonprofit called Indigenized Energy helped install a solar array last year. The solar panels and battery power a small bunkhouse, internet service, and a freezer that stores processed bison meat, along with gates and electric fences to keep out intruders. In December, Solar Builder magazine named it one of its solar projects of the year. Indigenized Energy founder Cody Two Bears helps tribes develop long-term strategies for renewable power. He believes energy and food sovereignty go hand in hand and will help tribes become more independent. He adds the goal on the reservation is to bring the buffalo herd closer to self-sufficiency in an area with no grid access.
There are buffalo in the middle of nowhere. There's no transmissional lines that go out there. And it would cost them millions of dollars to get electrical lines out there. So we did an off-grid project.
That project is already paying off, with Small and the Buffalo Program donating more than 5,400 pounds of buffalo meat to the tribe last November. They also sold 103 animals to a South Dakota rancher for about $126,000. Small explains the solar array is designed to grow with the herd, and he hopes to build a small processing facility on site. He believes solar power will help the program become self-reliant and succeed without funding from the tribe or U.S. government. This story was produced with original reporting from Alana Newman for the Daily Yonder. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And Montana's Republican Party continues to dominate the state's politics, even as fractures in the coalition are showing. A district court judge denied a request to block Montana GOP operations while a lawsuit plays out. The request came from three of the party's own members. The legal challenge stems from the GOP's convention last summer, where members elected new leaders. Before that vote, members decided to exclude a group of nine state senators. The group was known for breaking with party leadership last legislative session. The party had censured the senators, saying they undermined the majority caucus. In their lawsuit, three of the excluded senators say the party violated constitutional protections for state lawmakers. They cite a provision that grants lawmakers some immunity during legislative sessions. Lewis and Clark District Court Judge Christopher Abbott wrote that legislative immunity protects lawmakers from retaliation by other branches of government. He denied the request for a block on party operations and said the lawsuit is unlikely to succeed. That's the Weekend Worm for the second week of February 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm this coming Monday. We'll keep these weekend editions coming, too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.